Now, are you looking for effective tactics to alleviate anxiety and get your life back on track? Well, the book we're going to be talking about now aims to help you achieve this goal by choosing the path that works best for you on a daily basis. Welcome to the show, the author of Path 365, Susie Newell.
Hello.
Hi, how
Thanks
are you?
Thanks for having me. Good. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. So the full title of the book is The Path 365 Daily Direction for Ladies, Mothers, Witches and Others. What does that mean?
Well, when we started, it was I had worked with women. My doctorate is in coping mechanisms for women. And the team that we assembled to create the book were all sorts of different types of people. So we included the byline to let people know that it's really for everybody.
And where did this all start? Because I believe you were a nurse, weren't you?
Yeah, I am. I'm a nurse anesthesiologist, and I work with obstetric patients. So my sister had died of an overdose in 2017.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Yeah. And I came back to work, and I work in a part of Ohio in the United States that has a very severe addiction rate. And I had put epidurals in three patients that day who were heroin, were addicted to heroin. And I came back to my room, and I just had to do something. And so, you know, I was crying and I'm looking around and I'm thinking, what can I do? And I thought, well, I worked in peer support. I've turned my own life around, you know, 20 years before. Why don't I start a group for the women in this community associated with the obstetric unit? Because there's so much shame in being addicted and being a mother. And so I started a group, and then it just kind of exploded from there. And I started working. I went back to school. I got my doctorate. And as I was finishing that up, COVID was happening. And I was talking to my husband, and I'm like, everybody could use this. I really studied coping mechanisms. That was what I studied. And I studied the neuroscience behind coping mechanisms. And I was talking to my husband. I said, you know, everybody could really use this stuff that I do for these women. It's all neuroscience. It's relevant to all of us. I said, there should be a daily direction book out there that, and so we looked around and I was just curious, and there wasn't anything that specifically fit all my criteria. So I wrote it.
I think it's a great idea. And obviously 365, so one for each day of the year. So is it something that people look at daily and they get messages, sort of encouraging messages?
So I've heard a lot of different things since people have started using it. The original intention was for it to be a daily direction book. So you open and you follow and it goes in order and it builds on top of itself. But some people, that's just not how they work. And so they open it randomly. I've met several people who have read the whole thing all the way through and then keep it at their bedside and read something every day. So it really just depends on how you want to tackle it. It does build on, it starts off simply and gets a little more complex with time, but it just depends on how you feel comfortable with it.
Yeah. And it says here that each message is written as a question.
Yeah. So at the bottom, there's an intention. So it starts off with usually a quote or a saying, and it's campy, right? It's funny. And that was the other thing. I really wanted it to be relatable as opposed to all this neuroscience and here's how to change. You know, when I lecture, I talk about that stuff, but for daily direction, you just want to be able to relate to what someone is saying. And so it's very relatable that way. So there's usually, it starts off with a title and then some sort of quote or some sort of saying, or sometimes I'm just being funny. And then there's the message. And at the bottom, the intention is always a question, because the idea is that you answer the question the way you feel comfortable creating your own path. So it doesn't matter what you believe, what you think, what you want to do, you create that path for you so that it's very workable within your life.
And I'm guessing it's not just for people who struggle with addiction. It's for people that are having to cope with stress, with depression, all sorts of mental health issues.
Exactly. So one of the things that, I mean, that is exactly why I wrote it, because I thought, particularly with the advent of COVID and everyone being at home by themselves, and depression was such a thing. And, you know, we sit down and bury ourselves in pizza or ice cream and Netflix and wine and just make our lives, you know, simple that way. But those are the things that increase our depression. And so this doesn't say you have to be perfect, because none of us will ever be perfect. What it says is, hey, take a look at this. Maybe you could do this instead. And if you don't, we're not going to judge you either, but keep trying.
Yes, exactly.
Very simple. You know, it's not judgy. It's not rule-y. It doesn't tell you what to do. It says, hey, think about this. What would you do? So definitely for people who don't struggle with substance use disorder.
Yeah, it is one of those things, isn't it? You can get up the morning and they say get out the wrong side of the bed, you know, not be in the best of moods. But it just takes something to just give you a bit of a feel good. And if it's reading one of your messages, then that's going to work.
Yeah. So the neuroscience behind it is really incredible. I always say that nothing is new under the sun. We've reinvented. We just now understand the hormones behind how we feel a little bit better. So, you know, not, I always say 900 AD, there was some priest talking to some wise woman, and she said, well, you know, you've got to process through this stuff. It's a good idea. People have to confess their souls. And the priest was like, that's a really good idea. And, you know, confession was born. So psychotherapy has just always been there. It's just reinvented itself over time. So the three things that this does is it's mind, body, spirit, right? So mind is cleaning out your mind. You've got to get that stuff out. You get it out to somebody else, a trusted friend, a counselor. Somehow you process through, do a lot of writing, maybe reading a book, maybe reading self-help books. I know one. Maybe reading leadership books, things like that. And then you've got to do the body work, which everybody hates, right? Because we're all increasingly fatter, and especially in the United States, of course. So you do exercise, you do food work, but it's all very personalized. Maybe it's a walk around the block. Maybe it's yoga. Maybe you're not good at any of that and it doesn't matter. You just do something to move, something to be conscious of your food. And that brings up your endorphins, which everybody knows endorphins are the thing that exercise brings up, your endorphins. But I think what we don't realize is the spirit portion, which is, could be meditation, could be sitting in your bath with candles, could be prayer, could be some sort of religious practice, whatever it is, that actually quiets your mind and increases your dopamine receptors. So everybody's been out and like maybe drank too much or did something, woke up the next morning feeling like horrid and depressed. And the good news is you can learn how to flip that script and create that dopamine for yourself and bring that up through these practices.
Now, that makes sense. But Susie, doesn't that sort of illuminate your dopamine receptors?
So addiction crushes all of your dopamine capacity. Ah. So if someone is in active addiction, they can, within 3 months, can basically shut down all of their dopamine receptors. And in that way, they are unable to create dopamine themselves. So they actually need the chemical to just feel normal, not high, not good, just normal. So if you wake up in the morning, you imagine that all of the chemicals in your body that make you feel normal are absent. That's where that desperate, like insane behavior comes from that is associated with addiction, because they would do anything from killing themselves to, you know, robbing a bank to get what they need to get that chemical so that they can just feel normal. It's a hollow, desperate feeling. And so we all have different variations of, you know, even like binging out on ice cream one night, the next morning, if you start to notice how those things affect your body, then you can say, hey, I think this dopamine and endorphins are down. Need to eat a little better today. Need to take a walk. And you can start to consciously, mindfully understand how to create those practices in your own life.
Yeah. I suppose it's similar with alcohol, isn't it? Because I know if ever I've been out, say on a Friday night, on the Saturday, I feel a little bit down. And I think that's what alcohol does.
Oh, it's the exact same thing. I mean, the idea that there's a difference between drugs and alcohol is just cultural. You know, it's the same thing. Alcohol is a drug.
Yeah.
It's our biggest one.
Yeah. Fortunately, just going out on a Friday night doesn't always get you addicted.
No, yes. And yeah, I mean, that's the same true for anything. People have done, you know, things in their lives in different periods. It doesn't mean that they're addicted. They just have to get through that period.
Yeah, recreational. And it's interesting that you say, because I always thought, and I imagine a lot of people would think, that somebody who is addicted to drugs, they take the drugs for the high. But you're saying they're not doing that at all. They just want to feel normal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is completely true. So after a certain period of time, there's no high anymore. Narcotics and amphetamines are, this is their hallmark, is that they reach a point very quickly, actually, where they can't produce their own feel-good hormones. And so just to feel normal, they have to take the drug. So sometimes when you see people acting bizarre and crazy, it's because they don't have access to the drug, not necessarily because they're high.
Yeah. So what's the answer for them? How do they get a complete brain reboot?
Ah, so the brain reboot and that's a problem, particularly in the United States. And I'm sorry, I'm not as familiar with Spain's healthcare system. I do know it is centralized, but in the United States, of course, we don't have a centralized system. And so there's no way to create the system that we need. What we need is a system that treats the brain the way that we do with a stroke victim, or the way that we treat a diabetic. For instance, a stroke victim comes in and spends weeks or months retraining those pathways in the brain to be able to move that left arm or walk down the street. With substance use disorder or addiction, you need that same time and training, and you need physical therapy for the brain. And that way you can train the brain to make that dopamine. You could actually get dopamine levels and regulate how much this person is growing and changing through time. So we have the science, we just don't have the foundation for it. And there's so much stigma against mental health and substance use disorder, and even just having a bad day. You know, a lot of times we're not even accepting of our own bad days. I have to be perfect all the time. And if we would be a little more gentle with understanding the physiology behind it, we would be able to address those things as they come up.
Yeah. I think the world of social media hasn't helped. Everyone wants to attain that, like you say, to be a perfect person.
Isn't that so true? Yeah. I look at that and I feel so badly for people that grew up with the social media, because of course I did not, but I look at it as Main Street. You know, you walk down, you say hello, you're polite, you don't have to.
Yeah.
You know, I guess there are people on Main Street that always compare themselves to other people as well. But this is just a much more intense, judgmental platform.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating stuff. And I will give the details of your book and your website shortly. But I was looking at your website and I love the poem that you wrote called The Path, and would be very grateful if you could read it for us.
Well, I am grateful to you. So let me take a look here. I did pull it up. Of course, it came down. Okay. Eyes burning and searching, the weight of the pack crushes her shoulders. Each step brings more pain. The journey is long. Sunlight patches tinted green through a verdant canopy. Distant water falling over rocks. Wind mists across skin. Skin that sparkles with the dew of effort. Tiny purple flowers sprinkle the edges, creating fragrance and art and splendor. This path is beautiful. Trudging, choosing, moving forward, breathing, believing, becoming, working, resting, moving toward an inner peaceful thrumming. Chirping birds, unseen creatures snapping branches, so much beauty, so much pain. She walks, she stumbles, she sees, she trips, she falls, she breathes, she laughs, she learns, she chooses. And by choosing her own path, she becomes the woman she was meant to be.
Very, very good. I like that. That says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah, hopefully.
It really does. Well done. Well, we are selling your book on our website, tre.radio. For our listeners, it's called The Path 365, Daily Direction for Ladies and Mothers, Witches and Others. And it's by Susie Newell, who is our guest now. Just reminders of your website, Susie.
It's www.thepath365.com.
Well, it's been lovely to chat to you. Thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you so much, Selena.
My pleasure. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.